Welcome to the Socialistic Approach podcast. This is Sharon, your host and founder. But did you also know that I am a transformational career coach, helping those who are disconnected and lost in their careers and in business? I help you regain purpose and find your calling. This is done through a one-on-one, soul-connected, and client-centered process. Did this resonate with you in any way? Do not hesitate to embark in a free discovery call with me today. I will add my link to my website in the description. Now sit back and enjoy this next episode. Hi, Shakti.
Hi. Hello.
Well, guys, welcome to the Socialistic Approach podcast. And this is officially not only the first recording, but also my first guest.
Yay.
So, thank you. Important to talk about a little bit about not only our guests, but what we're bringing to the table today, which is part of our healing series. It's all the things that are an embodiment of healing and often we miss during our healing journey. And one of those is, how do we embody our healing personal journeys and also being entrepreneurs, business owners, or just women in career, period, right? But before we get to that topic, let me introduce my guest. Shakti Rios is a certified human design specialist and emotional freedom technique, EFT practitioner. Is a guiding light for those seeking cosmic alignment with 14 years of entrepreneur experience in healing, trauma resolution, and spiritual advancement. She empowers individuals to embrace a unique path, their dharma. Her transformative approach fuses human design and EFT to liberate clients from mental and emotional limitations, paving the way for authentic success, which is exactly what we're talking about today. She firmly believes that inherited genius resides in everyone, and her work is dedicated to helping clients unlock their true potential. She is more than an entrepreneur. She is a transformational guide. Her mission is clear: to unlock the cosmic genius within each individual, fostering a world where fulfilled and empowered souls radiate their true brilliance. And boy, do we need more of that.
Yes, we do.
So we really do. And where you and I relate is that we are in the business of transforming people through guidance, mentorship, coaching, even. And in a world that still lives in a strong platform of capitalism, and let me clear, the idea of capitalism is not what's wrong with it, it's how it's evolved, right? Because we're business owners, we capitalize, but it's more so the monster has become. And how do we now move forward and thrive in business? It's related to authenticity, it's related to the true meaning of inclusion and diversity. And how do we learn to collaborate through that and live in community, in communion? So in your experience, what stands out to you the most about that?
There's a few things I want to say off the cuff. The first one is a disclaimer, and that is that I really stay out of for a good reason, social economic conversation and political dialogue, because that's very, very artificial. That's very constructed by minds and individuals that have a vested interest in keeping us hyper distracted from really becoming bigger than we are. So there's a very poignant interest in keeping us concerned and divided in all of these micro conversations that in certain ways have validity and need to be discussed. And in other ways, there's a much larger conversation that needs to be had, which is the one that I want to bring to this platform. Because if we're all having the larger conversation, then by nature, the smaller ones find resolution. And that's what we're missing. And that to me is like what's really significant here, is for us to understand, by nature of what I do, I'm a human design specialist, that entire system is based on understanding individualism at its core, understanding who you are as an individual on this planet, contributing energetically and physically to the conversation, right? So when I'm looking at my clients through that field of human design, through that system, which is a very mechanical and logical system that gives us an immediate display of talents, strengths, challenges, you know, issues and circuitry, energy, all these kinds of things. What it does for me is it helps demonstrate to my client, this is where the work is, right? And this is where the focus should be if you want to advance, you know, capitalize on your talents, et cetera, et cetera. So by nature, the system that I offer my clients is very individual focused. And my vision for using this system with people more and more, and eventually with teams, which is the direction that I'm moving in, is to create a future where we are bringing our individual brilliance and our individual talents into a collaborative and cooperative space, where we are no longer having this dialogue of how do we compete with each other and take the other person out and become, you know, this or that. We're now focused on our individual genius so much and what it can bring to a collaboration or to a cooperative environment, that we're more focused on that and the good that it can bring into a space than we are on outdoing someone else or outperforming someone else. That's really my whole big emphasis with really showing people their genius and brilliance, is like, we need to stop looking at what other people are doing and saying, oh, we need to do that better. Like, that's more of this old world, homogenized, everyone's doing what everyone else is doing, thinking. The trend thing is like a very homogenized, everyone doing the same thing, thinking. And we are, by nature of the epoch that we're in, we're leaving that world and we're moving into a whole other epoch of reality, where that's no longer going to be upheld by the program or the matrix that we live in. We're now moving into an epoch where individual contribution is becoming very, very important to recreate community in a whole new way. So this is what I mean by there's a much larger conversation to be had here. And if we're having the larger conversation, by nature, the smaller conversations find resolution.
How do we help people transform that mindset? Because that is sometimes the first obstacle that we run into, is mm-hmm. this very ingrained idea that this is how the world functions and this is how mm-hmm. things are and this is what mm-hmm. I know to do. Mm-hmm. I'm resistant to change. Mm-hmm. How do we plant that seed into those people to start seeing that for themselves?
You know, what's so fascinating is, by nature of having free will, right? We can do whatever we want with our brains. And so when I'm having these kinds of conversations with people who are really anchored in this kind of more micro conversation and they don't want to leave the micro conversation, I'm like, okay, you don't have to leave. It's fine. My question to my clients, and this is the same question I pose regardless, like when someone hires me and they're really, I call it fighting for your limitations. Like, they're really, really fighting for their limitations. They're like really committed to defending their limits. I say,
it's like,
you know,
do
what?
You want the red pill or do you want the green pill?
You know, I'm like, listen, you can fight for your limitations. That's totally fine. I'm on your side. Here's my question. How well is that working out for you? Mm-hmm. How well is your worldview serving you? Are you happy? Are you fulfilled? Are you progressing? Are you finding allies? Are you finding opportunities for positive change? Or are you angry? Are you bitter? Are you anxious? Are you finding more things to fight against? Are you finding more problems? Do you sleep at night? Right? So,
how are you dealing with loneliness?
I don't care what you think. You can think whatever you want. You can focus on anything you want. My question to you will always be, how well is that working out for you? That's how you begin to change your worldview, is when you realize that your perspective might actually not be serving you at all. And if you're an anxious, problematic, drama-wrapped mess, you're absolutely useless to the collective, because the only thing you're bringing to everyone else is all of that. All of that goes with you everywhere mm-hmm. you go. So if you think you're going to help anybody from that space, that's almost laughable from like a metaphysical, energetic standpoint.
Mm-hmm. So what would you say to someone who's being enlightened by this awareness and is going, ah, that's true. I seek more. I do deal with depression. I do deal with drama, but I mm-hmm. don't longer want those things attached to me. Mm-hmm. I want to change and I want to step into community. And yeah. it may not be spelled out that way in our heads, right? Mm-hmm. But that's really what we're reaching for, is to be in a belonging group. We get to be effective, productive, helpful, mm-hmm. supportive. Mm-hmm. What would be a good first step?
So my first recommendation to anybody who is like, I see this, I see where I have been aligning with all of these things that I don't want in my reality anymore, but I don't necessarily know how to cross the bridge to get to what I want or what I imagine I want, because I'm still kind of trying to formulate that. The most efficient thing anybody can do is really know who you are, which is where human design steps in for me. Really get to know who you are and what you were designed for fractally. And what I mean by that is, when you really get to know who you are and you get to see yourself, like your imprint, your blueprint, like, oh, this is what I was designed to be. This is what I'm really aligned with. This is what like vibes more for my aura, my design, right? When you get to know that and you get clarity on that, it's fascinating how you start to magnetize things that are more of you, right? You don't even need to really know what those things are. And this is, I've taught manifestation for 14 years. So people get this wrong all the time. It's like, you don't even really need to know with exactitude what you want. What you need to really get is a feeling of what you really aspire to feel. Is it calm? Is it peace? Is it confidence? Is it like groundedness, right? And as you get to learn about who you are, you naturally develop those things. You start to see, like, you start to feel more validated. You start to feel more confident. You start to find a sense of like inner peace, because you start to understand yourself. And mm-hmm. as that starts to happen, you start to radiate a very different frequency. You just become different. Your aura changes. And what starts to happen then is that you'll notice the first thing that will happen when you start to gain this awareness is that people will start to drop out of your life left and right. Mm-hmm. Relationships that you've had for a long time will start to fall apart. And I warn all my clients when they start working with me, if you head for divorce, if your best friend stops talking to you, if your parents disappear, my apologies, but this is part of the work. Because yeah. as your fractal alignment changes, as your frequency changes, you know, you're not a match for those things anymore. They stop being a match. And so they naturally have to prune themselves away. It's like a radio station. You're trying to listen to 98.3. You're not going to get 98.3 at 98.1. It's going to sound fuzzy and weird. So mm-hmm. as soon as you change the dial and you hit 98.3, everything else gets tuned out. You're only on 98.3. So if you've been living the 98.1 life and you dial up to 98.3, the natural side effect of that is losing everything that's not 98.3. Right? Mm-hmm. That's what happens.
And I resonate so much. And may I add a personal take on that experience myself? There's keywords there. It's not only awareness, alignment. Mm-hmm. And what signals that you're in alignment? It's more clear than people may imagine. Mm-hmm. So many, I want to say about 3 to 4 years ago, and this is all during COVID, it might have even been prior, but anyways, I was back in school for my psychology degree, and I knew before taking this class that my calling was around helping people. I read this book called Road to Character, and it was about people who decided to act bravely or whatever it was during a certain circumstance because they were aligned with their character that led them to their calling. Mm-hmm. Interesting. We don't often think about how important our character molding is when our character molding really is a reflection of not only who we are, but who we want to be. And we do have a say in that, right? Because that's what growth is. Mm-hmm. And when I was reading that, I said, I just feel like I'm this jack of all traits, which is not necessarily a bad thing, but I want to see it in a different light. And I remember I wrote all the things that I do. I sing, I'm a leader, you know, I'm a speaker, mm-hmm. You know, all these things. And I'm like, what's at the center of that? And I said, it's to help people, period. Mm-hmm. Like, period, right? Like a strong dot. And I realized that no matter where life took me, whether I was in all those elements or I was in one of them, as long as I was in one of them and I was helping people through them, I was in my calling. And that gave me ease and peace about the future, because I knew that as long as I just work in filling up my elements, those skills, those gifts, and not letting go of what is feeding it, which is helping other people, I knew no matter where I landed, I was going to always be in my calling. It doesn't have to be, like you said, this specific title. Your calling is going to evolve just like you are, because you're attached to it. Mm-hmm. And by the way, your calling calls you. That's a reminder I like to make to people. Your calling calls you. So you're going to hear it. You're going to see it pull you. And mm-hmm. are you in alignment with it? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Are you in your element, in your anointing? There's so many ways of describing that. Mm-hmm. And so here it is 3 to 4 years later. I had said to myself during that class when I was discovering about people's skill set and a career path, and I said, I'm going to help people find their calling because I know I found mine. And I know it's a soul connected process. And 3 to 4 years later, here I am doing it. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know I was going to do it as a life coach. But like I said, I just worked on preparing myself just so that I will be ready to give my best within what I was given and within my calling to whatever life was taking me to do.
Let me ask you a question. Did you lose people along the way?
You know, I think that I lost people to a certain extent, right? There's work relationships that I no longer keep in touch with, but they never truly, I always was aware that they truly weren't that deep. Okay. The ones that were had questionable moments, but I always knew that if these people who I had called into my life a long time ago, I had prayed and I said, God, find me the right people for me. I said, if that was true, they'll withstand the changes. Okay. And so the ones that matter, that always have matter, that I've always had that soul connection with, stand.
Yeah.
But my, you know, I would say my relationship with my parents, you know, shifted, but they caught up. They caught up to my change, right? And that embody, even in their imperfection, their love for me is real. It's coming from that parental heart. My best friends, they've evolved, I evolved, but they have ride that way with me. Good. So even with the differences and how, you know, how that's we're evolving, it works. So you get to, you don't lose anybody that you weren't supposed to lose. I would say you will lose those that really need to be gone. And the ones that are willing to stay or were supposed to always be there will stay. And you will know the difference.
That's the fractal thing. It's like you happen to have fractal alignment early on. So they were still that, they're going to match up to that radio station, either because they are already there or they're going to get there. Right. Yeah. But for a lot of people, that's not the case. Mm-hmm. For the majority of people, they have made allies in the wrong places for where their soul wants to go. So when they start waking up, as you asked me, what's the most beneficial thing someone can do is get to know who you are really deeply, like get to know what your values are, get to know what your design is, get to know yourself at your core, because that's going to pave the way for you automatically. The more you know who you are and what you stand for, the more your aura begins to shift, the more your frequency begins to change. And things naturally start to find their way out and find their way in. Now, the next part of that is the fear that people have, because immediately some people are going to listen to this and go, I don't want to do that, because they already know that the marriage that they're in was the wrong fucking marriage. They already know that the relationships they have around them are not the right ones, right? They already know that. So the wall of fear is going to come up immediately and they're going to feel the resistance. And so then the next step is handle that. Handle the fear and the resistance, right? And you've got to ask yourself, like, is what I want worth more than what I've got, right? And this is a big dilemma for a lot of people, right?
Fear is an ongoing topic. I love the topic of fear because as someone who was diagnosed with panic attack disorder, anxiety, all those things are related to fear, right? And I always say I am a courageous, fearful person, meaning
I love it.
Fear is always trying to knock on my door, right? It was something that was learned early on, you know, not intentionally, right? I think sometimes parents and adults around you project things that help them keep themselves feeling safe and do not understand how you're conceptualizing it. So I always knew what fear meant without even understanding, you know, being able to maturely process how it affected my life. But I've always also had the balls to say, even if I'm shitting myself, I'm going to knock at that door and like open it and run through it. Right.
You know what's screaming and kicking. What's interesting about what you're saying is like, you could not possibly be courageous unless you were afraid.
Correct.
Really think about that.
You like, just you got can't. To my point before I even hit it.
You can't be. Because how are you going to be courageous if you're not afraid? That wouldn't exist. 100%. Like, you wouldn't be courageous. You would just be, you know, normal.
So I did content actually on this not long ago, that the recipe for confidence is fear and courage. Because so many of us focus on, but I just don't feel confident enough to do this. I don't feel confident enough. Like, I don't believe that I can. And honestly, is you're so focused on being a confident person or thinking it's a self-esteem thing, when in reality it's a conscious decision to be courageous. Mm-hmm. It means that you're going to feel fear and you're going to want to crap on your pants and not want to do this because the uncertainty is driving you insane. Mm-hmm. But is, are you willing to see what's on the other side? Mm-hmm. What are, may you be missing out? And I always ask my clients that, what potentially are you missing out on if you don't cross over? I mean, you know what you have, you know, the discomfort in your comfort because it's familiar. What's unfamiliar, but what are you like missing by hesitating, inviting that uncertainty in? And so a lot of times that's what gets people to like make those things practical. Like, well, what will be a first step? Right? Maybe it's going out and have dinner by yourself.
That mindset is so pervasive in so many things. I say that confidence and motivation are like showers. You need them every day. Like, you need to work on them every day. You don't just get motivated and then you're done. You don't just get confident and then you're done. Like, that doesn't work that way. But people have that mindset about everything. Same thing with weight. I worked in fitness for a long time. Weight loss or even sick, like money. I'm a business, you know, consultant for a lot of people. So people think you lose a certain amount of weight and then you just feel differently about yourself automatically. People think you make a certain amount of money and then you're just not afraid about money anymore. People think that you just get confident once and then you're not, you don't struggle with confidence anymore. And it doesn't work that way. Yeah. None of that works that way. All of that is an inside experience. It's an inside job. You handle your anxiety with money by handling the anxiety with money. And then you don't have it, regardless if it's this much or that much, you handle that. You handle the way you look about the way you feel about your looks by handling that, not by attaining an external goal to handle an internal experience. Mm-hmm. You've got this messed up. People think that by hitting some sort of external marker, you're going to handle an internal experience. And it's never the case. It never works that way.
Yes. Yes.
You can't handle, like, you can't fix the inside of the house from the outside. That shit's right. Never going to work. You got to get inside the house and handle the inside of the house, right?
And, so, and constantly manage it. Of like, course. Talking about the analogy of house, constantly need maintenance. And there's too much of this message that about resolution. And resolution and then being the end of everything. Like, I want this problem to go away and I never want to deal with it again. And this is why people will work on something, will read 20 million books on the topic. And years later, it's like, why am I still struggling with this? Well, what is your expectation? Mm-hmm. It's the expectation to use the awareness as a gift in order to now manage this differently, to potentially see it as something that may be a shadow for a long time, but doesn't have to necessarily sit at your table. Mm-hmm. Let it circle you. It doesn't have to sit at the table. You can invite other things at the table that can become the center point of how you live your life. And I think stepping away from that mentality that I need to solve it all, and more so, how do I progress, grow, and use this pain as the evolution of my growth? Mm-hmm. I mean, this is why they call it growing pains.
Plus, everybody's trying to heal from the outside of the house again. Everything you just listed, reading books, attending courses, it's all called conscious work. You don't resolve in the conscious. You resolve in the subconscious. This is something people do not understand. Mm. So I'm an EFT practitioner. I work with nervous system regulation, emotional regulation. I do create permanent change in emotional brain patterns and brain circuitry. Like, you do that with specific modalities and techniques. You don't do that by reading a book, because the book, the part of you that's reading the book, is your conscious mind. You don't create change from the conscious. You create awareness from the conscious. The yes. conscious mind generates awareness. Oh shit, this is happening. That's why therapy is good for awareness. It creates awareness of a pattern, of a problem, of a habit, of a whatever. You go to those things for awareness, for like subconscious resolution, brain rewiring. You go into the neurological components of the mind, which are not available at the conscious level, which is why for a lot of people, therapy doesn't work the way that they want it to work. Which is why for a lot of people, going to a course or reading a book, it doesn't do what they want it to do. Because of conscious issues, right? So we just got to know what we're, the expectations, as you said, are really important. You have to know what you're going for. If you need the awareness support, then you know you're going to get it in XYZ thing. If you're looking for reprogramming or rewiring, then you've got to do a different thing, right? There's two different worlds for this work.
So important what you said, and it reminded me of why coaching is affected in that way as well. I never compare the two, because therapy is a complete different thing and it goes deeper. But with coaching, what they share in common is that there is a sort of talk therapy in there, as a legitimate coach understands that 20% of the conversation they do and 80% is your client. So this client is processing most of the call, and you have to allow the pacing and the space for it. Because in that processing, all of a sudden, is what we call the aha moment. Oh, I didn't see it this way. And what happens next? Why our technique is all about moving forward is, how do you take what you know now into a new habit? Because that's what it's about. It's not going to change. It's been deep in there, along with other things. And you just becoming aware of it is not just going to be the solution. Now, it's the first step. Now, how do you commit to now breaking what you're aware about or changing what you're aware about? I think it's the most challenging thing, and where you really get to see if that client's committed to that process, wants to really move forward, or they're still wanting to be in that comfort.
I mean, coaching and therapy are both conscious exercises, you know, where with coaching, the point of coaching is that you're moving forward from where you are. You're creating a plan, a set of parameters to move someone from here to here. If you just think of the word coach like sports, for example, the whole point of hiring a sports coach is to give them strategy and modality to get from here to here. The team's not doing so well, we hire a great coach, they get better, because this coach has perspective, experience, and strategy. And this is really what a coach brings, as we understand it, to the life of another person. The thing with therapy is that they're going back in time. So you can look at a coach and a therapist as one is moving forward in the timeline, the other one's going back in the timeline to bring awareness to things that happened in the previous person's timeline so that they can move forward, right? So it's still conscious work. This is still conscious work. And this is why I often don't call myself a coach, because I don't really do a whole lot of that. Sometimes there is some of that in the conversation that I feel. But with EFT, I'm really doing subconscious reprogramming. I'm doing brain reprogramming. So I'm not even doing, I'm going back a lot, but only with the intention of reprogramming, not to talk about it, right? So it's a whole different angle.
Which is why I love the take on both, and I love the combination of both with a lot of clients that feel that they need both, because you're working on, you know, you're doing this back work and really like getting really in tune with that, as well as having another support to that where you can move forward. And I just think it's such a great combination, especially for those that really want to like shift and like really want to get this done, really want to experience this healing process in their life. But going back to some of the subjects we were talking about, right? Like we share aspects of healing and authenticity. What's missing in inclusivity, right? That word gets thrown so much. And when you and I had that conversation about it, diversity and inclusivity. And when you really look into a lot of corporations that are doing all these listen, I came from one, right? Constant, every 6 months, you would take training. People are like, Why do I need to watch these videos again? Like, because clearly there's something we're not getting. And the thing is, when you measure what's going on in the environment, your retention, what employee retention, right? How successfully you're hiring, right? Those surveys, how are they coming back? Your culture does not represent all this training that you're taking. And the word is just being thrown around both in the corporate world and outside. Self-care is a whole market now, and inclusion diversity is another one as well. And how do we protect the authenticity and that, what that should really mean?
God, I'm such a, I'm like, I'm a heretic to ask this question too. So I'm about to blow up this topic and really make people think in like a whole new direction with this. True inclusivity is so absolutely terrifying to the majority of people that we would not be able to apply that even if our fucking life depended on it. And I'm going to explain what I mean by that. To be a truly inclusive person means to be able to hold within yourself all varying forms of life and experiences of life without judgment. Okay? And what's ironic about the inclusivity movement that exists now in workspaces and in society is that it's the opposite of that, almost altogether. It's like, we're going to accept these people, but fuck those people. We're going to protect these people, but those people are the problem, right? Like, it's become further compartmentalized. It's actually the opposite of inclusive. We've become more exclusive by way of trying to claim inclusivity, which is a fascinating thing. Really, if we think about what it means to be an inclusive person, and I always said, you know, I could solve all of these issues with like one very simple conversation, one simple conversation that starts at the school level, that starts at kindergarten. And here's how that conversation goes. Here is Susie. Here is Bill. Susie is a person. Bill is another person. Susie has feelings. Bill has feelings. Susie has concerns. Bill has concerns. Susie gets scared. Bill gets scared. The point of being human is that you look at another human and you say to them, I don't have any idea what your human experience is like because you're a completely different human than me. But I know that you're human and I'm human. And if I have all these things going on inside of me, you've got to have some of those things going on inside of you too, by the nature of being human together. And so I'm going to do my very best to listen and be empathic and connect with you because I can't possibly know what your experience is like, but I know what mine is like, and it feels like shit sometimes. So I'm just going to be here and hold space for you. And we're going to do that for each other. And we start teaching kids that at age 4, right? Like, we have no idea what the other person's experience is like. We can't know that. Not because of our ethnicity, not because of our race, not because, but because we are all completely different people, even within being Hispanic, even within being queer, even within, we're all different. That's what design teaches us. That's what human design shows me, which I love. We are all literally snowflakes. There's no way of knowing what the other person's experience is like. We can't even pretend to know that. Mm-hmm. But what we can do is be empathic and self-aware. And you know where that starts? Being that for ourselves. And the biggest problem we have in our society right now is not that we can't show empathy for other people. Where that comes from is that we don't know how to do that for ourselves. Because everything we give others is an extension of who we are. It can't be anything else. It can't be anything else. So if we really teach children how to be self-accepting and show grace for themselves and be empathic towards themselves, they will organically do that for other people because it's what they know. And then this whole conversation doesn't need to even fucking happen because I don't need to know dick about you to be kind and supportive and show you grace because I do that for myself. So it's a natural extension of my being.
Yeah.
With that single thing solved in one generation.
I love that take because it makes me think about a lot of things. It makes me think even about the individuals that often think because they don't have certain things in their hearts or they don't carry this indifference for other people, they sometimes, instead of adding that gifting that they have of accepting other people, they forget that other people don't think the way that they do. They're not as inclusive as you are. They don't have that amount of diverse friends that you have. And I have people really close to me that had to hit that wall of saying, well, I guess other men and other people don't think this way. Like, they really are out here doing these like nasty things. And I'm like, yes. And when you're part of an oppressive group, you know the oppressor a lot better. And that's the thing, that a lot of people are well-intended in that area, but that concept of only thinking about you and your experience, even if it's well-intended, even if you're kind and have those gestures, you're also missing the mark and understanding that we're not truly living in inclusivity, having that type of mindset. So I thought that was really the irony in that, where that person may be this well-behaved and kind human being, but still misses seeing that the world, in the world, we have these issues with inclusivity and true acceptance of other people. And so, that other people don't think like you do, unfortunately.
It's true, but it also doesn't matter at the larger scale. And this is my challenge. It also does, like, we are so attached to being seen as oppressed or an oppressor. We are so attached that it has created a bigger problem. We need to stop with this shit, if I'm being legit. Like, as a Hispanic immigrant queer, we need to stop. We need to stop. Because we are doing what I just said earlier. We are dividing ourselves further. We are missing the forest for the fucking trees. Okay? And the point is, my point is, if we started with children at age 4 in this generation with just empathic understanding of how to relate to themselves and others, we would wipe out this whole conversation in one generation. That's my point. Now, as adults, we're in a different situation because we weren't all raised with that same understanding, right? We're coming in with different levels of awarenesses and words and whatever. So it's different. I'm talking about, ideally, if we start at age 4 and we just had a general sense of empathic, self-aware conversation with 4-year-olds in a generation, we'd be in a completely different world where we would no longer be looking at oppressor brown, or we wouldn't be having this conversation because we would all be growing up with the same level of like, oh, this is a human that I need to respect and care for because we are humans together.
Because, and I get totally what you're saying, because the line can cross over into being so divisive so easily and quickly. The thing is that when you talk about, are we able to all sit at the same table and have a dialogue and meet each other halfway, even with those differences, the more and more these topics are rising in our media and social media, et cetera, the more difficulty people are having actually having the conversation.
Isn't that interesting?
So it's like we're almost hitting this other extreme.
That's it.
We want to make room for the pain. We want to make room for the negative feelings. We get it, right? There's been hurt, costs, all of that. But when do we say enough become that individual we expect others to be? And then also now focus on the next generation, like you're saying. And I do think that that's where the real work comes. Like, how do I become this truly inclusive, non-biased individual? We're always going to have biases, but am I aware? Am I working constantly on those, right? So that I can see people in their humanity, in their needs, and what they care about.
And you know, that's what I said earlier, being really inclusive is actually too radical and terrifying for people. Because being truly inclusive means you don't use words like oppressor anymore. Oppressed. You don't use that shit anymore. You don't use, I'm brown, you're black, that person's white. You don't use that shit anymore. When you're truly inclusive, you're holding it all. You can hold it all. You can hold people who are completely different than you, who may have done X, Y, Z thing, and just say, but I'm including you in this conversation.
And that is radical.
That's radical.
People hearing this will probably be like, I don't know about this.
Exactly. that's what I mean.
So let me tell you, as someone who is a churchgoer, it's interesting for me to have a platform where I do open the door for so many takes. But I also have had to do the work myself in my environment, in the church, where there is a variation, right, mm-hmm. of the understanding of the word God and mm-hmm. what this means. And mm-hmm. and there's certain things that I started clashing with.
Yes.
And I said, if I'm going to be part of this community, because I do feel that I can bring something important, helpful, I want to make sure my gifting is also existing in this place, I also have to be tolerant and work on my biases and work with that community as well, because they deserve to also sit at the table. And be many included. People hearing that will say, no, they don't. They don't mm-hmm. deserve anything. mm-hmm. But then how are we being inclusive?
Are you being inclusive? Oh, here, I'm so glad we're talking about religion. First
Thought
of all,
about it. Be about
this
it.
This is going to shock a lot of people. I've been a minister since I was 21. Okay. So I am an interfaith minister, and I have had so many of these conversations quoting the Bible left and right. Okay. Aside from being a yogi and being a lot of other things. Now, I have my beliefs that are very, very super strong. And I grew up with the word of Jesus, and I love him as a teacher. I have so much love for the work of Jesus, like profound, deep love. And it's so interesting when we think about inclusion and how in the world of Christianity, there is a really strong desire not to include, which is just very interesting to me. And
although
it
it's like one
laugh.
Of the most diverse communities. People don't understand that it's super diverse because
it's
so everything.
Diverse, right? But just in that one community, it's like, well, if you don't see the Bible this way, or if you don't follow the word that way, or if you don't, and I'm just laughing in the background. I'm like, this is my point. This is like when I sit at a table of Hispanic people and they're like, but brown issues. And I'm just like, ha ha ha. Like, because it's like, what does it mean to be truly inclusive? It is such a radical, radical behavior that very few people on the earth could probably call themselves inclusive, truly. And I'll give you a very big extreme that's like, this one has challenged me a lot personally. People who are like, Satanists and follow that literature and that way of looking at the world, which is really what it is hyper-materialistic. That, if you really learn about that philosophy, it's very material-based. It's like everything about the material, obsession over the material, you know, that is really part of that philosophy and life view. That's really challenged the shit out of me to include in my worldview and say, these people, whether I agree with anything that they think or do or whatever, like, they are still part of the human circle. And I still have to make room for them in what it means to be human. It's like, that's really been a big one for me spiritually, because it's so contrary to my own. But again, if we can't hold space, like, we're just not inclusive. We need to stop using that word.
A lot of people think that holding space, being able to sit at the table, I love that like illustration, just sitting at the table with all these different people, means that you necessarily are condoning or agreeing.
No.
That doesn't, it means exactly the opposite. You sit with people you don't agree with all the time.
And it's okay. But you're not just tolerating them. You're like, this is who you are. I can't tell you who to be because that's not my place. My place is to know who I am and to be that in the world. You are you, and you're going to be that in the world. And I don't have to agree with you, but I don't have to hate you either. I don't have to tell you what to do with your life. I don't have to tell you that you're less than I am. I don't have to belittle you. I don't have to put you in a camp of other. I don't have to classify you. No, we don't have to do that either, right? That's what it means to be truly inclusive. Does not have that hierarchy and that classification game that we're obsessed with. The labeling game is what I call it. We're obsessed with the, like, we have a label maker and we're just like slapping that bitch on everything. Like, good, bad, better, the worst. You know? Like, take the label maker away. Like, just get it out of your hands. You know?
I mean, and even going back to, you know, what I was sharing with you about the Christian community. And I'm like, we have like the most denominations. It's for a reason. saying that there's no, I do believe, right? There's certain things that are a universal truth in the word.
Yeah.
Right. But there is room for that word to be embodied in your life, depending on who you are and what you need. And there's room for interpretation in it, because that's what human beings do.
Right.
So nothing that is touched by humans is perfect. That being said, getting a take on inclusivity, getting a take on authenticity, how do we start merging those things into the mindset of entrepreneurs, mm-hmm. business owners, and even, like I said, career people, you know, and mainly career women, because I think, like, as women, that's the subject that we can relate to the most, right? Our own evolution in the business world, and having to be advocate for these things.
So, I mean, I go again to my original point of, yes, I am a woman and I have a woman's experience, and I'm really grateful for being a feminine in this life and having the feminine experience. And the only way that that informs how I operate in the world is that as a feminine, I know that I am a receptive vessel for all things. And so I operate that way in my business and in my life. I'm like, how do I become more receptive? Because that is the nature of the feminine. Whereas the masculine is very outward oriented, and that's just energetics. It's not a man or woman thing. It's masculine and feminine thing, energetics, polarity, right? There's a difference. So that's how that informs anything that I do, but that's where it stops. It really stops for me there in terms of how it informs my work in the world. But I am a yogi and I have studied yoga for a very long time. And one of our core understandings in that philosophy is that everything comes from within us. Like, we cannot experience reality outside of who we are, because we are the center source point of, like, our whole world. So you are the center source point of your business. You are the center source point of your relationships. You are the center source point of all things. You have no control over other people, over other situations, over anything except yourself. That's the only core point you have control over, is your mind, your emotions, your well-being, your body. These are the only things that you really truly have control over. So the one thing I can say to a woman who's a professional, who's wanting to grow grow an empire, whether it's career or business, is tend to yourself. Really know who you are. Really know what it means to have control over your senses, over your mind, especially, you know, because a lot of us are out here making decisions that are really ill-suited for us based on the mind games and the mind conversation. And we're not actually aware of, like, what we want, because we're still trying to please that parent or that partner or, you know, those children or whatever. And so we're out of who we truly are. We're not really tapped in. So if you really want to build something that's solid and satisfying and fulfilling, it has to start with your core, with you truly knowing who you are and what you came here to bring.
Or even escaping or leaving the corporate world, taking those concepts.
Yeah, same advice. If you're leaving, know who you are.
And metrics rather than values and authenticity.
Which is a masculine thing, by the way. The corporate world is structured under masculine values. So the things that are valued in the corporate space are very masculine. Result, action, strategy. Da da da. It's very left brain, masculine. Da da da. So when a woman leaves that environment and wants to be an entrepreneur and do things her way, she's going to find there's a dissonance between what she thought was going to make her successful and who she is as a being and body on this planet. You've got to become far more receptive than you think, and you really have to untrain a lot of those things in order for you to find you and work it. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I even see it on very practical, essential things, like once an entrepreneur starts hiring, right? They start expanding into a business and they're like, why won't these employees show up? Why, you know, I'm having such a hard time hiring. I said, you know, are you understanding now that you're transferring from entrepreneur to leader, but not only leader, that leadership is about servitude? And so those qualities of authenticity and inclusion and community and collaboration have to be embodied. Why would someone want to get paid whatever it is that they get paid to represent you? And so that human transition there, right, that's very real in businesses, often gets missed because we're caught up with the tragedy metrics. And the metrics, and then we hit goal, and those things don't matter. Yeah. Best believe I have conversion tools to track both of our businesses. But it's just numbers, right? What are the, what's the core there? What's the value?
Not over people.
Like, what do you do when those things don't work, right? Mm-hmm. What do you revisit again? And so this is where frustration will hit really hard, depression, anxiety, when we don't understand or have the tools to say, I need to go back to myself. Mm-hmm. And the saying goes, you are the business, but in every way.
Yeah.
In every way.
It's a reflection of you. Yeah.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So what are the things to look at when going through a self-discovery that makes that process more authentic than what's being sold to us as self-care? But you said going back to yourself, but what should that person be ready for to experience in that self-discovery?
A lot of grief. Mm-hmm. A lot of grief and a lot of shame and feeling guilty. That's something that all my human design clients feel pretty much right away, is heartbreak. I can't fucking believe it's been a whole life of me being against who I am or trying to please other people or now realizing how much I was hurting myself. They should really prepare for a lot of that. And that's actually a necessary part of being able to get to the other side, is feeling all of that, the disappointment, the heartbreak, the guilt, the shame, and being able to integrate that before they can really move forward, because that will inevitably come.
Yeah. I think about not only the grieving, but that microwave result mindset, you know, that we expect things so quickly. Mm-hmm. So guys, expect to grieve, expect to suffer, but
not suffer,
for there to be a
grief.
Grief.
Yeah.
To expect that, like, an invaluable result after you go through that experience. But mm-hmm. it isn't like a microwave. You don't pop it in and then expect results. You don't magically change things that you've been struggling with 20, 30, 40 years. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's just kind of like a diet. Like, when you start eating healthy, you're breaking these habits that are mind, body, and soul. That are related to food, right? And your nutrition, how you take care of yourself. You're not going to lose weight overnight, and you're not going to change those habits overnight. Mm-hmm. Why would we expect that from one of the most important things that I find, which is growing spiritually, growing as a person,
purpose,
and healing?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
But it's absolutely the next step to what real success, I think, looks like.
And it's okay to grieve, man. Like, it's okay to have difficult emotions. I think too many people are afraid of difficult emotions. They're really fearful of feeling hard things. And it's like, we don't have to be. Like, the reason you keep feeling that for 20 years plus is because you won't finish feeling them.
Yes.
That's why. Like, that's really it. You got to finish the feeling. You got to process that all the way out.
And I love that, even though I was jokingly saying you're going to suffer, I love that you shifted, that you're like, no, grieving. Because it is a different experience.
There is a different experience. Yeah, suffering is a choice. We can choose to suffer. Mm-hmm. Suffering is what happens when you artificially extend grief.
Mm-hmm.
When grief has met its, like, it did its thing, and then you just keep going.
That's, I feel, suffering. Like, I need to drop the...
And I work with trauma all the time, and I tell people, like, you aren't your trauma. And, you know, I again, I'm heretical AF when it comes to how I do things, but I get results. So I really don't care what people think about my, you know, I respect the fact that that was part of your story, but you can't keep living out that part of your story, because now you're suffering, and that's a choice. So what we have to do is resolve the grief. We have to fully integrate the grief and let it have its moment, so it can fully move through you, and it's no longer a part of your identity, because that's what happens. It ends up becoming embedded in a person's identity, and then it artificially extends the life of that experience. And that's actually incorrect.
That's, very true. What will be some final thoughts or a message that you would like to kind of share with those who are listening and watching?
Don't be afraid of the edges. Don't be afraid of the things that feel rough for you to hear or experience. I think if more of us were more willing to rub against the things that make us uncomfortable, we'd be a much better off population. So all of this conversation, there's been a lot of pointy edges in this conversation because I can be very heretical and activating it in my perspective in a lot of things. But I've grown to deeply appreciate the rough edges of things, because to me, it's built a sense of tolerance and acceptance of my own rough edges. And that has made me in turn a more gracious person towards other people and more inclusive towards other people, because I have accepted my own rough edges, right? So for anybody who's listening, like, don't be afraid to lean into the parts of you or other people that really rub you the wrong way, that get you like riled, you know, and really lean in with curiosity instead of condemnation, and allow your curiosity to expand the metrics of the way that you view the world. And you might be so surprised about what you learn and how much like more solid of a person that makes you.
Yeah. I think, you know, what your final kind of take on this, I think about what a great ingredient for a resilience mindset.
Yes.
And that living in shame, living in guilt, I always say, is a devil's playground.
It is. It's so useless. It's really the most wasteful emotion. Shame to me is the most wasteful emotion. Get rid of it. Genuinely. Yeah. Get rid of it.
I love this time together.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for the space, for having like challenging conversations. I'm really grateful for it. Really. I am.
I'm grateful for you. And I come to these conversations understanding that I don't know everything either. We may share some perspectives.
Yeah.
And then there's some that, whoa, yeah, I'm looking at it this way. Yeah. What would be the best way for people to be able to get in touch with you and find you?
My site is the best. It's just shaktirios.com. It's really easy. Shaktirios.com. All of my social channels are kind of plugged in there too. So if you're more of like a social person, when you go to the website, you'll see like Instagram and all the stuff. And so you can just follow me there. That's the best part.
Awesome. Well, if you're watching this, it'll be in the caption. And if you're listening on Anchor, it will be in the description. Thank you guys for listening, and until next time.
Bye.